You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of The Wicked Horror Show is broadcast live to Facebook. In this episode, we're talking The Nursery with directors Chris Mikolas and Jay Shapiro. As always, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show just like this one. We have an open chat room where you can interact with us and the guests. Also, head over to thedorkening.com to check out all the other shows on the Dorkening Podcast Network. And lastly, go check out our sponsors, Deadly Grounds Coffee, fantastic stuff for your mouth hole. Go to Deadly Grounds coffee.com. But first, enjoy the show. Okay, here we go. That was Deadly Grounds. That's our sponsor. Awesome people. But without further ado, we have Kevin.
What's going on, everybody?
Wolfman.
Hello!
Tony has nine fingers.
What is going on?
And co-director of The Nursery, Chris Mikolas. Did I get that
right?
Hey,
everyone. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And also co-director Jay Shapiro, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And Kevin.
All right, that was a little uncomfortable at the end, but whatever. So yeah, The Nursery. So yeah,
made it weird.
Yeah, for real. It just got very yeah. The Nursery. I checked it out yesterday, and I was pleasantly surprised. Like we've been getting a lot of stuff from Uncorked, and thankfully a lot of it's been some pretty good quality stuff, even if it's like lower budget. There's still things like this parts of this movie. Like I was actually talking to someone about it at work today, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, whatever, this has happened. Then I'm like, wow, I did not expect to see that in this movie. And I actually felt like I might have offended somebody by verbalizing what I had seen. let's just say there's a few pregnant people in my area at work. So I was like, oh yeah, so then this happened. And I was like, sorry, you know, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, so it was a pleasure to check it out. I mean, again, there's parts of the movie that are not like groundbreaking by any means. You know, there's stuff that you've seen in a lot of other movies, but there was still a lot of really cool parts to it that I hadn't seen. And, you know, I thought it was done very well. And this is you, both of you, your first time directing?
That's right. Yes, first time filmmakers. Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
So how did this all come to be?
Well, I just say first, I'm just happy you're talking about our film at work. That makes me so happy, you know, that someone is talking about our film somewhere. I'm just going to sit back and listen to Chris talk.
Yeah, you're, of course, referring to the live birth scene that you think may have offended. Yeah. You know, my wife's an OBGYN, so we had special access in there. So take the cameras into the hospital. We actually, so Jay and I and our third partner, filmmaker partner, Glenn Chung, who's the other executive producer and core creative guy on the film, we've been in business together for about 20 years. And we've been talking about making a movie for about 20 years because we're all great film buffs and we have, you know, all the equipment. You know, we have that kind of leg up on others. We own the edit system. We own the cameras, the lights. And we had some starts and stops, but we never got around to doing it. And about 2 years ago, we decided, you know, it's just getting to the point where we've got to do it. We're going to just commit ourselves. We're going to carve out the time and we're going to make our movie. And so, the three of us collaborated on a concept, on a story. We hammered out a treatment. I wrote the script, and then we just pieced it together piece by piece. And every step along the way, you know, I was the pessimist of the group. I was the most pessimistic about our prospects. And so I was like, oh, yeah, we'll get an idea, but we'll never get a script. And then we got a script. We said, oh, that's cool. We got a script. We'll never have a cast. And then we had casting sessions. We found a great cast. And then once we had a cast and we started rehearsing, we thought, well, we better make the movie, I guess, because these people certainly expect us to make the movie. And so we just moved forward. And every step of the way was like a little celebration. And before you knew it, we had a feature film in the can and edited. So it was an exciting process.
Nice. And then Chris said, we'll never get a distributor. I said, no, it's released in June, Chris. He's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Stop being a pessimist at this point.
Now I'm just waiting for the comet to hit the earth, you know, on June 4th.
So when it comes out in June, is it going to be released on Blu-ray and DVD, or just DVD, or what?
Video on demand at first.
Yeah, video on demand at first, and then in August we'll have a DVD and Blu-ray release later in the summer. So starting on digital and then moving to hard later.
Nice. That's good. As you can tell by some of us, we collect. So it's we're fans of having the physical media.
Yeah, it'll be there.
Good.
Yeah. So so you know, you've been working, and you know, this has been an idea for, like you said, a very long time. But from the time that you actually started to get things moving till the finished product, what was the time frame on that?
That was like about a year or so. We moved pretty fast. A year doesn't sound like a lot, like it's that fast, but when making a feature film, it's kind of moving pretty fast. You know, we decided to, like Chris said, sit down together, hammer out a good concept, work through the story together. Then Chris took that back and put a script together. We'd feedback on that. We'd basically set timelines. Chris mentioned that, you know, that we have a business together, that Glenn, Chris, and Jay all work together, and we had the lights and the camera. That's because we own a media firm. So we do a lot of videos, a lot of ads. So we had an idea, you know, and also being huge film buffs, what it takes to make a feature film, but we also had no idea what it takes to make a feature film.
Had an idea, but
yeah,
no idea.
But no idea at all. Yeah. So to answer your question, you know, we went pretty fast, but we treated this, we say all the time, kind of like a project. We thought, okay, we're a client. We're our very best client. It's our favorite client. And we are going to get through scripting at this amount of time. We're going to find a location, get a wardrobe, find all the crew. The shooting's going to take this little amount of time. Post-production, and then boom, just, you know, get it out to see if the distributor will pick it up. So we set a timeline and we stuck to it because we thought if we don't stick to it, it'll just never get done.
Nice. And I mean, there's a lot of like about this too. Like, so I didn't want, I hopefully didn't take it the wrong way when I said, like, there's things that aren't groundbreaking about this movie. Like, there's, you know, we've seen the scenario with a babysitter and, you know, these kind of things happen, but I think what made this different than the typical low budget movie is that, you know, there was some different aspects that I haven't seen in a lot of these movies, and including like the quality of the actors. Like, there was people that I looked them up on IMDb. And I'm like, I'm sure I've seen these people in other things, and I really couldn't find people that I've seen in other things. But they were all like really good. Like, are these like local screen actors, or are these people that are in theater in your area, or like, how did you find these people?
Yeah, we cast locally. So by and large, the cast comes from Madison and Milwaukee. We're located in Madison. We shot in the Milwaukee area. And by and large, they were students at the UW or recent graduates from the UW or people who worked in local theater. There was very little experience with film work in our group. But we auditioned, you know, in front of cameras. We had them modulate their performance so we could see them kind of playing to the room and then playing to the camera. And basically, we chose people who, you know, obviously they were the most talented we could find, but also who were able to take direction and who were able to, you know, fit with the rest of the cast. We were surprised at the quality of turnout we had for our auditions. We had dozens of people who were, you know, who could have been cast. But we think we found the right cast. We appreciate you saying that you thought they were very good. I personally think they're a real strength of the film. They're maybe one of the big strengths of the film. They really sell the story and they sell the film.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where I think this, you know, it stands out, is that it just, I think this takes like a babysitter movie that you've seen like a bunch of times and ups at a level, because it wasn't like there was like one strong actor or actress in the movie. They were all pretty great. So I mean that adds to it. You know, sometimes like you have the one person who's like kind of like the weak link, and they're just like, all right, well, they knew somebody on the cast or whatever. But that wasn't the case here. Like,
right.
So yeah, I mean, I really dug it.
Thank you. And if you don't mind me jumping in, you no offense taken what you said before about, you know, seeing it before. We started off, I grew up on the kind of the gritty raw horror films of the 70s and early 80s, you know, before it was meta and before it was all winking at the camera, that sort of thing. And so we drew a lot from that era of movies, you know, both in tone and atmosphere and also, you know, the storyline. It's, you know, it's basically a babysitter in peril story, right, with some paranormal, you know, to go along with it. And so we were, you know, I wouldn't say we were making an homage to those films, but we were certainly drawing on and inspired by those films. So, yeah, it's in some ways it's a little paint by the numbers. But we also think that with the introduction of technology and the way we used, you know, the iPads and the phones and stuff, it's very new for that kind of film. So,
Well, tell you what, we do have the trailer, and actually we'll play it a couple times throughout the show tonight. And Jay, would you like to introduce the trailer?
Sure, sure. It's a great little trailer that Uncorked Entertainment put together. Does a great job of introducing the idea that Renee, our lead character, shows up at a remote home to babysit. She meets the parents and something is a little bit off. And by the time you're done with that trailer, you get the sense that there could be something pretty wrong with this setting and with that nursery.
Awesome. So here we go. Here's the trailer for The Nursery coming out June 5th.
Renee.
You scared me.
Sorry about the wait. Come on in. Tanya just put the baby down, so you should have a pretty easy night.
And there's a monitor here on the tablet.
We should get going, honey.
Something's going on in this house. Seeing things.
There we go. That was this trailer for The Nursery. I was about to say something. Okay. Comes out June 5th by Uncorked Entertainment, our buds over there. Awesome. You know, they just keep on sending us quality stuff. Also, if you have questions, we're streaming live on our Wicked Horror Facebook page, the Dorkening Facebook page, Periscope and Twitch. And YouTube as well. So post your questions in the show notes there, and we'll get to them. And Wolfman had a question.
Well, it wasn't really a question. It was more or less a statement saying that, Chris and Jay were saying that it took them a year, and the year it might not seem fast to most people, but it seems fast to us because, as you guys can atone to this, we've had people on here that I've said that it's taken him 4 or 5 years to make a movie because it's taken him 2 or 3 years to write the script.
Right.
You know, as Kevin likes to say, we do know people that shoot in a weekend.
Yeah.
And those are different. Those are different kinds of movies. You guys are fans of the genre and just in filmmaking in general. So,
mm-hmm.
there's a place for like trauma type movies and
sure.
there's a need for them. I love them. You know,
they are
what they are.
Yeah. You know, and we get that. And we even definitely with writing the script that it can take a long time to write the script, but it also can take a long time to get through post-production. You know, we quickly realized that, you know, I was the editor on the film, but Chris was sitting with me every day and Glenn, our other business partner and filmmaker, did all the special effects. We could have gone many different directions. The color treatment alone, you know, I remember presenting, so to speak, you know, Chris and Glenn with what I thought what might work. And we could have tried it a million different ways. We thought, no, let's just go for it. We had to keep saying, let's just keep moving forward. I remember Chris saying a couple of times, even as we were working toward the end of the film, at some point we put our film on a site called Film Freeway so distributors could see it and see if they wanted to take it on. And I remember I was dragging my feet a little bit. Or Chris at one point was like, when are we going to put this on Film Freeway? Just like get it done. So I think it kind of helped that we encourage each other just to finish it up and not let this drag forever.
Yeah. It's easy to keep tweaking just to say, you know, I mean, there's still things that you look at today and say, oh, we could have just kept going. We could have kept fixing. But at some point, you got to just lock and load and put it out in the world.
Well, and that's because, you know, you're at the end of the day, even though you're doing this, you know, it's you're trying to sell it and, you know, and get it out to the masses. It's still art to you. And you're never going to be 100%. If you're 100% happy with what you've created, there's a problem.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, it's good to care about it. You know, Because we there's other people that we know too. They're just like, yeah, well, this is a job to me. I just do this and it's a job, you know, whatever. It's like,
yeah,
you should, your name's on it. You should care about this.
It's definitely our baby, you know, it's the nursery, but it's, you know, we just, we I know exactly. That's hilarious. You can insert the laugh there. But we had we were at a film fest in Milwaukee and just seeing it on the big screen again. I mean, Chris and I, we sat together. We were half just thrilled to see it on the big screen. We saw it once before when we did a friends and family screening, but just to sit there, we kind of cringed too, just waiting, at least from my perspective. I just kept waiting for something to happen, being like, oh, I know on this version I did something wrong with the transfer or something's going to happen. You can almost not quite enjoy it because you're so tied up in it, but that ended up being a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something, you know, down the road, you do like a special edition or something.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Six on a little
10 years later, I've remastered this or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. We'll address some things.
You were saying something, Wolfie?
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask them because when they were, Jay and Chris were nice enough to come on sit down, they talked about the fact that there were like eight different versions of the script, you know? I'm curious from a standpoint of what were the things thrown in and taken out of the aforementioned scripts before you came to the final?
Well, you know, the first one was just a mess, right? You know, you just kind of put everything into it. And, you know, when you start writing, at least as a screenwriter, when I start writing early on in the script, I think there's no way I'm going to get 90 pages out of this. So I got to like lard it up with an extraneous dialogue and jokes, you know, that, you know, once you start saying them out loud, it's just terrible. It just sounds terrible. And so the first couple were just to get it into a decent shape. And then we changed, we found a location that was a perfect fit, and so we rewrote the script to accommodate the location. Instead of a multi-level house, it was, or a two-story house, it was a house with a basement. And so, and we had this great back storage room in the basement, which we never, you know, contemplated in the early draft of the script. So once we saw that we had this amazing set, we were like, we got to write, you know, some action to take place in there. And so we rewrote that. So there were additions of scenes. And then once we had the film cast and we did we let our actors get their scripts for the first time, they gave us feedback. You know, one of our actresses, Emmeline Friedrichs, you know, she was very, you know, honest, saying, you know, I just don't think the character would say this or that. And, you know, so we took into consideration what their feedback was and their interpretations of the character. And we did another rewrite based on that. So it was just, it wasn't massive wholesale changes every time, but it just kind of kept evolving until we had a locked script.
Yeah,
more like evolutions of the script then.
Absolutely, exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, small refinements. You know, nothing from that first script to the final, there's not a huge change, I don't think. And like Chris said, even our actors, you know, they're a different generation, they're younger than us, and they gave some good feedback on some of the popular culture references we had at the time. I'm being nice about it. Yeah,
no, they're like, they're like, yeah, with it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, all the kids are sitting around talking about the latest episode of MASH, and I was like, they were like, you know what, that's not how it is anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I pull up in a car and listen to Steely Dan. You're like, I was
going to say someone's wearing a Motorhead shirt.
Yeah.
Well, that's
kind of, I'm fine with that. That's
more relevant than Steely Dan.
Someone has a problem with that. They're out of the film. Yeah. Exactly.
Anyways, but so. This being your first feature, I'm assuming, well, you guys are in the industry anyways, doing commercial work and stuff, but are you going to take some time and then do another one, or are you, what's the plan?
Yeah, we're already in development. So we created a company, a film production company called Three Tortured Minds. So the three of us, that's the banner this current film is flying under. And we are in development, conceptual development on a new film. And our hope is to get it all the way into production yet this summer, late this summer. We really want to keep moving forward with this. This is kind of, we've enjoyed it a lot. We've had, I don't want to say success, but we saw it through and we've gotten to a point where we have a distributor. So for whatever that means, thought we would just, yeah, success. Thank you. So, why not, while this one is in distribution, we should try to write and produce another one and see if we can't, you know, keep moving forward with this because we loved it. I mean, Chris has mentioned, with, you know, we've talked to people and I say all the time, you know, this has been just fantastic. There's nothing painful about it. There's nothing that I would dread in the morning, think, oh, I have to work on the film. Unfortunately, and very sadly, my father passed away when I was working on the film, but he knew this is a passion. Even in his room when he was in hospice, I had my laptop and I was matching up audio and video and working on it while we were together. It's a passion project. He got that. And I've enjoyed every minute of working on the film and now seeing it all the way through. And now can't wait for this to be released to see what happens and whether it falls flat or does well, kind of doesn't matter. This is something I think that all three of us just want to keep doing.
Yeah. You know, the truth is we did it. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this is one of the ones I think will do very well, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, the truth is we did it to do it. You know, we always wanted to make a movie and we were like, let's just make a movie. And at the beginning, the idea of even getting a distributor and getting it out, you know, to the masses was just never, I mean, it was a dream, but not anything that we thought was a realistic dream. We started having some success building a social media community. So we thought, well, maybe we could self-distribute and we could get a their own, do a little marketing on our own. But then as it goes forward and, you know, it's like, okay, this is, you know, it's an exciting process, but it's not magical. There's no voodoo to this process. It's hard work and making a decision to do it. And then, you know, just kind of pushing through the rough patches and getting through. And so, you know, once we got, you know, probably through production, I think once we were through production, we were like, you know what, this is something we want to keep doing. And if we can do this, you know, more consistently, then that's what we want to do. And so that's the plan. So knock on wood.
Nice. What you have for distribution is decent too. Like it's the you know, things that we've seen that we've received from Uncorked at least is like, we've been like pretty pleasantly surprised with a lot of stuff that we've gotten from them. So yeah. You're in good company. That's there's a great. Lot of like really cool stuff that they're releasing. And as far as the self distribution goes, it's like, we've seen it really work for some people and other people, not so much. So yeah. you're in a good spot right now. And it's, I agree with Wolfie. I think this one, you know, as long as people like actually, you know, make the choice to watch it, I think they're going to dig it.
No, thank you.
No, we appreciate that. We appreciate it. Yeah. And with Uncorked, we really appreciate that too, because, you know, we kind of didn't roll the dice. We did a lot of research. We had a few offers on the film. We were fortunate and that we did some research. We called other filmmakers that had worked with Uncorked and Keith there. And they have such a great reputation. It's so nice to hear people say, you know, he's such a nice guy. He's so honest. We listened to podcasts with him and that, and we could just tell that, you know, that he only takes on a few films and he has an idea what he wants to do with the film. He's not going to bundle ours with a bunch of others and just hope for the best. And so we'll see what happens in June, but at least no matter what happens, we feel good that we're with the right people and that we've made some good choices, hopefully.
Yeah, we had about a dozen offers on the film and probably about six that we seriously considered. And we, you know, as Jay said, we reached out to other filmmakers that we found, on IMDb Pro. And everyone, you know, all of them had, they're good, but, or there was this issue. But we probably talked to about a half dozen filmmakers who'd worked with Uncorked, and there was not a bad word spoken. They just have a great reputation. Yeah. And so far, they've been terrific with us. Last several years, I've been reviewing movies, horror movies for a couple of different websites. And when I went back and said, okay, I wonder if I've seen any of Uncorked, the better ones that I've seen had all been Uncorked movies. So yeah, we're pleased to be part of their family.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Before you were saying that you kind of other creators, you already had the equipment and stuff.
Right.
What would have been the hardest thing to do in the process, since you kind of had, you know, a little bit more than some other filmmakers? Was it like, you know, location or finding finding the people to play the characters, or what was the hardest thing out of the whole process?
Yeah. Well, you know, we joke about this, and it's not that much of a joke, but Jay and I, we often say that the biggest fear we had throughout is because there's just so much, you know, there's just so much you have to, with a micro budget film, you know, you wear so many hats, that our biggest fear and our expectation, frankly, was that we were going to get to the post-production process and realize we forgot to shoot a scene or we missed like some, you know, important shot. And so one of our biggest accomplishments was actually shooting everything we needed. We were just tickled pink that we actually got everything in the can that we needed. But I think the organizational thing on a feature film is just something that we were not necessarily prepared for. You know, because we didn't have a huge crew, we had a great crew, but we didn't have a huge crew. We didn't have a script supervisor. We didn't have a line producer. We didn't have a continuity person, you know, so you're just like, so we're doing it, you know, so we're like, okay, we need to set the camera up. We need to, make sure the lighting is consistent with our vision. We need to talk to the actors. Oh, and was that pillow in that same place the last time we shot? Because that's up to us to figure out.
And that was the challenge. I mean, that was beyond. Chris and I sat here and just put the whole script on a note cards, and we organized the shoot. That was a daunting task to figure out, like, when everyone could make it from the cast, from the crew, we can get to the location, and just make sure we would get everything. But like Chris said, being on location and not having a script supervisor, what we would do is we would shoot. I would have my computer. I'd back up all the media right away, and then I'd have a master hard drive that we'd bring back to the shoot every day in case we had to reference a shot to see if it would match. And, you know, because no one else is going to take – we didn't have time to take notes. We were all dead and tired at that point. So we just kept having to reference all of that. And Chris is right. The biggest concern when we started that early stage of post-production – my big concern is I remember stringing the whole thing together. It's like, okay, success. We have everything we need to make a movie. We'll add all the effects and stuff later. All I care about is that we didn't have like somebody say a line and then cut to nothing. You know, we heard from the crew that everyone is going to have some pickup shots. You're always going to have to shoot a little more at the end and figure out something else. Thankfully, we didn't have to do that. We were able to get it all in the can. And that was a huge accomplishment from our perspective.
So
one of the things you brought up about like continuity and stuff too, and it's funny because like I tend to pick that stuff out like a lot, and yep. I thought that I had seen one, and then but it was part of the movie. So then I was just like,
we know
okay.
What you're trying to think. It's probably the dream thing. The sequence. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I'm like, yeah. I thought that there was a baby monitor there. Now, what else is going on here? Okay, but yeah, I mean, I was like happy at that point. I'm like, all right, good, that's good.
So there are a couple moments too where like late in the film, I don't want to give any spoilers, but where a character says something and then something happens contrary to that. And when people read the script, they said, oh, you made a mistake. You know, I thought you made a mistake, but then you came. So there are a couple wrong turns occasionally in the film, whether it be visually or in the dialogue that pays off. So,
yeah. And there was some cool little like almost like little hints to what's, you know, what's happening before you really explain to, you know, what's happening. Like there was a few little things I thought were pretty neat. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
really happy it works. Yeah.
You know, one thing that's really neat.
Oh Jesus. Here we go. Here's a shoehorned promotion for Deadly Ground. Sorry guys.
Deadly Ground's coffee. So unfortunately I'm not drinking any tonight. Cause my sleep has
explains all forgetting the intro. And
I know I'm not caffeinated.
He's not drinking. He has to get up super early for work, and he can't be up wicked late.
Exactly. So,
anyways, we have a sponsor. It's Deadly Ground. So okay. We'll just get to it. This is painful. it always is.
Sorry. Hey, Deadly Ground's coffee. If you want awesome flavored coffee, I mean it. I've tried tons of different flavors from Amazon. I keep on ordering these different, so many pounds of coffee in my closet, just trying to find a flavor. And I've yet to find anything that tastes as good as Deadly Grounds. It's, you know, just a hint of chocolate raspberry, the Witch's Brew, just amazing. Head on over to Deadly Grounds Coffee. Getdeadly.com. Check out the show notes down below or up above. But more importantly, here's a zombie to tell you about Deadly Grounds.
A white zombie.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
It was ridiculous.
Crusty, cruddy. It was like six different words for your comic books.
So I hope Leo's live read for that was just as sincere, because I would have loved to heard him sell that.
It was bad.
Have you noticed how much creepier Jay's getting, by the way, in the corner?
I know. I might have to turn a light on. So I have windows that are lighting me. I'm gonna
just
go.
A single light like pointing right at your face. Yeah,
I think it's effective, actually.
Yeah. So I got a question for both
neon
of you.
Arrow pointer.
Yeah.
If you were to go back in time, and I'll give both of you
are
a chance.
Are we back, by the way?
Yeah, we are back, yes.
Okay.
If you were to go back in time before you started this project, what is one piece of advice that you give to yourself?
Ooh, good question. Jay, I'm going to let you handle that one.
Well, I think we were, while I'll compliment us and say that we were super prepared and we've done a lot of video work and ad work, I've said this before, Chris has heard this, my fault as the co-director on it. I would say know your equipment. Even though we own the equipment, what happened, it was my fault, is that when you shoot a feature film, you shoot the audio separate from the video. And then usually you pair those up, and that's seamless because of how you shoot. Well, my fault, I did not have that pairing done correctly. So we still recorded audio separately, but we had to shoot all the videos separately. So we probably had the movie done about a month and a half earlier. I had to take by hand and sync up over 1,000 clips.
Oh, wow.
Because I did not shoot it, or we didn't shoot it, but my fault, correctly ahead of time, even though I've done this for 20 years and I have a degree and I taught it in grad school, but yet somehow I forgot this. So I would say I go back to myself and hit myself in the face and say, are you just that dumb?
So I got a question on that. So what did you use for editing?
We use Adobe Premiere Pro for the hardcore editing.
Okay.
And so the effects, After Effects with Mocha as a plugin. And then we used, with our audio work, we worked with a company called Audio for the Arts that used a lot of Pro Tools, but everything was hand done. The music, by the way, is all composed. Not the music, but the sound effects, all the audio is done by Audio for the Arts, and it's original. It's all original stuff. Even the killings in that's all hand done with cantaloupes. There are some people stabbing cantaloupes and pumpkins in that.
Don't give away the cantaloupe kill scene, Jay. No spoilers.
Is that going to be the next movie? Maybe a cantaloupe?
I think it should be. Yeah. Yes.
I must say that when the movie started, usually I'm not, I guess, really care too much about the music. I'm more into the movies. But from that first song, I was like, I need to find, I dug the music and I dug the song. Usually, like I said, I'm more focused on the movie. And then I was talking to Jay before we came on, and I was saying that usually I can, you know, kind of guess what's going on. The ending kind of caught me off guard. I was like, oh, okay, that's what happened, and that's where it came from. Because usually in the middle of the movie, I'm like, okay, this is the killer, yeah, this is what happened, or this, or that. And I don't like to do it, but it happens.
Right. Yep.
But this one, I'm like, okay, well, that's different. And then they're trying to figure it out, and I'm like, oh, I thought it was that way, but it was going this way. So I dug it. But the music, too, I definitely looked up who it was. I was like, okay, I definitely got to start listening to it. So
that's great. No, we appreciate
thank you for that.
We appreciate that. We really paid attention to music. I mean, I'm a musician. I love music. Mm-hmm. I love to go to bars and listen to music, but I would also go to local film or audio or music mm-hmm. festivals and that, just to see if I could discover talent, mm-hmm. because a lot of the folks, our crew and that, they're all Wisconsin based. And I really wanted to try to find Wisconsin based talent for music. We found, Abby Wolf and Michael Sapiro, my brother, they were at the time both in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But we're actually working on a film right now, and I'm already starting with music to try to find bands and people that we can get the rights to their songs, because that's such a huge thing that people, I think, overlook, especially in these low-budget films, not just audio on the set, but audio and post-production. Audrey, again, who did our audio, she composed the music, as I mentioned, but it's all in the keys of D, E, A, D, and B flat. And the whole idea, of course, is that it spells out dead, and in the end, everyone might be flat. I mean, there are ideas that you try to put into music and into a film that whether people know or not, but yet those are the kind of the fun things that are behind the scenes. But songs like you mentioned and things that just kind of move the plot forward or at least enhance it with these small films can make such a big difference.
Oh, totally.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And music can, in that same vein, like if it's the wrong choices, it can take you out of a movie completely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know? That's right. That's the risk, right?
Totally. Yeah. But it's and one of the things like Tony had brought up, like there's little twists that you almost didn't see coming, and I'm sure that comes into your love of the movies. And like Chris, you said you've been reviewing movies for some time. I'm sure you've seen everything. You probably like okay, so I got to do something like what hasn't been done, or maybe a little different twist. But how long have you been doing the review thing? Like how long has that been going on?
Well, I've probably been doing that, and I haven't been doing as much lately because we've been so busy with the movie. But, you know, for just about 2 or 3 years, and it was just, I used to write a great deal. I used to love to write, and then got away from it a little bit. And then decided I want to make a point of doing more of that. And so that was a way to kind of force myself to do it. I set up my own, blog and was doing reviews, and then once I had some of that, I was sending it off to some sites, and they would say, "Hey, your stuff," and I got to do some reviews for them. But it was just a great way. One, it exposed me to a lot of these low budget films that even I, as a fan, wasn't seeing otherwise. And so that was exciting. And then it just kind of sharpens your writing skills and gets you into a habit. To me, writing, which is something I love to do, it's a habit. You got to do it. You got to do it consistently. I tend to when I'm in a good habit, I get up at 5 a.m. every day and write for a couple hours before the rest of my family gets up. And, then I'll get up and, get my daughter moving for breakfast and that sort of thing, and then try and get some time at night, too. But if you're not in the habit, it's easy just not to do it. And so anything I can do, whether it be reviews or whether it be scripts or whatever, to just stay in the habit is an important thing.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
You should review our movie, Chris.
I will review our movie, yes, under many different names, yeah, under many fake names,
So totally, I mean, it's off subject of your movie, but over the couple years that you've been doing it, has there been any director or maybe movie that's really, like, impressed you?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of there's been a lot of good ones. There've been a lot of really bad ones.
Yeah.
And then there've been a fair amount of good ones. One that I wasn't reviewing, but that we actually had an opportunity to talk to recently and get to know a little bit, was Lou Simon. She's a writer director. Her first film was Hazmat, which came out, I think, about 4 years ago, something like that. And she's got a new movie coming out this year called 13. Is it 3 or 13? 3. And she's terrific. You just don't have that many really accomplished female directors, writer directors in the horror genre. And her sense of, I was just so impressed by Hazmat, which is an extremely basic, it's a one location, stalker sort of film, a guy in a hazmat suit, hunts down a bunch of people and kills them, which is about as simple a premise as you can get. But her sense of suspense and timing was just outstanding. And so she's one I would point to that I just think is terrific. And I'd give a thumbs up to, yeah.
Nice. I'm always looking for recommendations because it's like we see a lot of stuff.
I bet.
At the same time, too, for the amount of stuff that we're seeing, there's so much more that aren't even on our radar,
Yep.
So it's always interesting. So I might have to find out where your blog's at and then maybe do a little stalking. And
absolutely, I'll let you know. Yeah,
and she's really cool. We have a podcast. We interviewed her on the podcast, and she's just the nicest person too. So it's nice that someone that's a great filmmaker, kind of breaking some barriers with the genre to a certain degree, smart, and then is just a really nice person. That's nice to have that whole package.
Yeah, we've lucked out. We've had a lot of really really good directors on. We've had some nightmares. I'm sure Wolfie will agree. We've had some nightmares.
Who?
I don't want to name names.
I don't care if we name names. I know who you're thinking of. I really don't care.
Well, I don't want to go there. But anyways, and we've had a few nightmares. But all in all, because they all know, like, we're just same thing with you guys. I'm sure with your podcast, like, we're here because we're fans of the genre and we want to help. We're not here to bash anybody. We're not,
right.
Whatever. But some people just, they just don't get it, But whatever.
You know, you hear that from we were lucky enough to participate in some festivals, and usually these festival organizers are all people who do it just for the love of film and stuff. But then you hear the horror stories, you know, they'll kind of take it aside and say, oh, I had this one guy who was just complaining the whole time about the sound or the picture and yelling at us because, you know, we didn't do the screening right. And, you know, it to us, it's just such a foreign concept because we're just so grateful for, like, anytime someone's showing our movie or interviewing us, it's like, you know, thank you. You know, we really appreciate it. When you're doing something you love to do, it just makes no sense to me to be a dick about it.
Right. I agree.
No, I agree with that 100%. We'll talk about it after the show. But I know one person in particular that Kevin's thinking about.
Anyways,
there's two. Oh, I think I know the second one too. Right. I think I know the second one also. That. But yeah, did you guys ever? I mean, while you sound like you're very well organized when you put this movie together, and you know you got the gear, you got the people, you got the crew. Did you think about just shooting this in, you know, total continuity instead of having to go back and shoot certain scenes at one time and other scenes at another time, or just shooting it, you know,
shooting it in order instead?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. We didn't really consider that, I think, primarily because of the schedule with the cast. I mean, we had little bits that we could get somebody at this time for a few hours this time. And then the crew, depending on what we were shooting, we have a couple of bigger events that happen, reveals where we needed a couple, like one time a camera assist that had to help with the pull focus. We had some bigger scenes with some of the effects we had with the villain where she needed to be made up. Her body had to be full with makeup and latex and make sure that she was in full form. So we couldn't, but that would have been kind of fun, especially for Phil's first time actors in a feature film. I think that would have helped them quite a bit. They were, like Chris mentioned, they were all a lot of, to get into the role, because some of these young actors, we started them out on one of their first days with a deep scene, a scene where they had to have a deliver something either very pretty powerful, terrifying, react to something that we didn't shoot yet. And this is their first film, but they all did very well. But I think that idea to shoot it in order would have helped them tremendously. But I can't say that at this point, after seeing the film, like I wouldn't say that that would have given us a better performance, because I thought they all did a really good job. They were just so professional.
Yeah.
You always hear that. I mean, I would say 99% of the time when we talk to someone, they are always like, yeah, we had to shoot it this way. But there's always that one or two people you hear, oh, no, we shot the entire movie in order. I'm always thinking, that'd be so, from an editing standpoint, that's got to be so much easier. It's like, I don't have to look for that,
right?
For that scene, you know? It's like, it's one of these three over here.
That's the one, yeah. That would have been kind of sweet, actually. I like that.
I never even really thought of that. Because I've never made a movie, but I've never really thought of the fact that, like, but you said like some of their first scenes were like really emotional, like big scenes. Like, yeah, that must be like, I already give actors enough, like a ton of credit, you know, where it's like, I can't do any of this. I can't make it believable by any means. But the fact that like, as you're explaining this, I've like never really even thought of that. Like, how does that even work? Like that's just even like, more credit to the actors.
The end of
for real, even more credit to the actors, well, like for real, like right. that's huge.
Well, we even shot go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm trying to think of the actress we had on not too long ago. She said that the very first scene that she had to do was she had to make out with somebody that she'd never met before. That was the very first scene. And it's like, okay, here you go. Here's your scene. You two are making out. You don't know each other. Go for it. Make it believable.
We actually, it's funny, we had that exact same experience. Jay and I made out on set. Yeah, amazing.
We knew each other. We just tried to break the ice for everybody. Like,
no,
right.
Actually, we did have an actor and actress in the movie are boyfriend and girlfriend, and their first day on set together, he had not been able to attend our table read because he lives in another city. So he dialed in on a conference. So they had never met before. and had never worked together before. And one of the very first scenes that they had to shoot was a pretty intimate scene. They were making out, and then they're on kind of top of each other on a couch. And, you know, they we talked to Carly Sauer, who's the actress recently on our podcast. And she just said, yeah, it was really awkward. But we just kind of looked at each other and said, look, you know, we're professionals. We'll do this. And if one of us gets uncomfortable, not that he was going to get uncomfortable, maybe she was going to get uncomfortable. They would just, you know, stop. And but they did a great job. They were totally professional. And, you know, it's stuff like that that you just don't, like you were saying, I mean, you just don't think about it. And even as you know, as directors, we scheduled that scene without thinking, oh, this might be an awkward thing for the actors to do. So there's challenges like that that come up throughout the entire process that you just don't anticipate, but you know, you deal with, and they deal with, and they did a great job.
Yeah, and it's not particularly intimate either. I mean, it's the whole crew there. You know, we're all there. And to be honest, I mean, Chris would razz me to a few times there. I had to tell our lighting director, we need a little more light on her cleavage. And, you know, we just had to put her into, like, one place. You know, this is not we're not being exploitive. It's not that kind of film. As a matter of fact, one of our lead actresses, when she was interviewed for a newspaper, she said, and when she read the script, she thought it was low-key feminist, that it was just because it is the way the story unfolds and the way the characters take shape. But getting back to that point.
That's my Twitter handle, by the way, low-key feminist.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, they may do, we all may do with what we had to do on set.
That's crazy.
I must say, because usually with paranormal movies, I mean, the latest ones with like Paranormal Activities, you know, it's one, you know, one trick pony. You watch it once and then you're like, okay, well, this one, you know, caught me off guard many a times that I'll probably watch it again and still get freaked out. I must say that I was watching part of it and I'm like, let me turn the lights on for right now. Usually I must say it creeped me out. I was almost like a Leo Pawn where I had to keep the lights on the whole time.
That's what we call the Leo effect. Yeah,
but
just so you guys know, we give Leo crap because he had to watch The Conjuring with the lights on.
So, nothing wrong with that.
Conjuring was a tough film. I think The Conjuring is an effective film, actually.
Oh, yeah. I thought The Conjuring was great. I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, I loved all of them. Like, yeah. Conjuring 2, I even like, you know, the other, like Annabelle, whatever. But it's like, oh, it just reminds me how much I like The Conjuring. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah,
I still need to see the sequel.
We give him crap, and we still will.
Yeah, I still want to see the sequel. I just, you know, haven't.
Yes, get brighter lights.
there's a lot more jump scares.
Get brighter lights. Yo-Yo says.
Anyways,
I'll move to box lights into the living room.
So, is there any like
shows up
like,
the next day and redness all bubbled out?
Anyway, so is there any like you guys are genre fans? What would you say is your biggest like influences in filmmaking? Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be from the genre, I guess, but maybe just in general. What films do you credit for influencing you and your career path?
Jay, go ahead. You start.
I'm not genre specific. I mean, I think what I do is I keep notebooks. I write down shots I like. Chris and I are doing a lot of it sounds bigger than it is. It's not a lot of press for this movie, you know, so we get like questions from people like, you know, blogs and for articles and things like that. And one thing that I did write is that in one little short scene, our lead character is looking at a TV screen and something terrible happens. And then she hears her friend scream off screen. And so she turns to listen to that scream and to like face where it's coming from. And so I was thinking of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, Back to the Future, when the person is standing there, no matter who it might be, and the camera rushes in, and right when it gets there, they turn around and look. It's very, you know, Spielberg does it, you know, it's just Zemeckis does it. Mm-hmm. Very impactful, not at all genre specific, but I thought it worked really well in this film that, you know, as soon as she heard the scream, the camera rushed in, she turned, and I kind of wanted to hear about the Back to the Future music at that point.
Yeah.
So I draw inspiration from, I love Miller's Crossing, The Sixth Sense. I love, of course, Goodfellas, all different kinds of films. And I'll not necessarily steal some ideas, but draw some inspiration. It could also be from a commercial I'm watching on TV, thinking that's a good shot or that's clever. We should do that at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. My, you know, my formative years watching horror movies, I mean, I grew up on the old classics like the Universal and those, and I still love that stuff today. I collect classic horror memorabilia. But from the era that I grew up in, you know, obviously I'm a huge Halloween fan. Got the Halloween behind me, the poster, which I just think is a perfect horror movie. And so, we were to an extent emulating that film in terms of atmosphere and trying to, you know, focus on suspense over, over gore and, you know, that sort of thing. So that definitely, you know, John Carpenter, I think, is a brilliant director. I'm nothing at all like him in my approach to filmmaking, but I'm a huge Stuart Gordon fan. Not just, of course, Reanimator, which is just brilliant, but, some of his smaller films as well. I love Stuart Gordon. And I find that someone like a Don Corsarelli, you know, in Phantasm, you know, Phantasm isn't a, you know, it's a rough around the edges movie, but it is just so, you know, it's like, he went out there, and I really admire this, and just said, you know, here's something you've never seen before. It's weird as hell, and deal with it. And it's going to be, you know, and I don't care what you think of it, because it's going to be a classic. And you know, that I really, so those are some of the influences. I wouldn't say that our approach, you know, in this movie or my sensibilities are anywhere near as audacious as like a Stuart Gordon. And, you know, my sense of suspense is nowhere near a John Carpenter. But those are the people that I really admire and that I really, you know, strive to, you know, if we're obviously not at that level where, you know, someone actually read a review that said we almost break the barrier between B and A film, yeah, which actually is good enough for me.
Yeah, I like that, actually.
You know, yeah, that sounded good to me.
There's some fantastic B movies out there. Like, I wouldn't find that offensive at all. I think that's great.
Well, we have a clip in the movie of The Devil Bat, which is, you know, an old Bela Lugosi movie, which is a bit, and to me that was kind of a nod to that. It's like that's a great old B movie. You know, he was in a lot of these B movies. A lot of my favorite movies are B movies, so I have no problem being in that. But it was just the point being that, you know, these are guys who make great movies, and just to be like in the same, you know, to be part of the same canon as these guys, you know, in a small way is just, you know, to me, it's the thrill of a lifetime.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's you know, we're all fans of everything. You know, this show like kind of gears towards horror, but we're all fans of everything. So it's awesome to hear that, you draw inspiration from everything. That's great. Yeah. You know, and it's I'm always curious on like what people are, you know, you'd be surprised at some of the movies that people are, you know, whatever, but that's cool. I mean, it makes me maybe look at it maybe a little differently the next time I watch it, you know?
Well, hopefully that's why, even with a horror film that, you know, we have these, Chris and I, we say all the time, you know, we co-directed, we share a brain, you know, with meeting with clients, with everybody, we know what the other one is thinking, you know? And so, but to a certain degree, like Chris just outlined, you know, his very detailed background with horror and the depth of knowledge with it, and mine isn't as much, but yet, so sometimes that sensibility that I have might complement what he has to say, okay, well, you know, with this, you might not expect it because Jay doesn't have that history, but he has a different perspective. And likewise, Chris might do something where it is exactly what the audience wants to see, because that's where they're going to see a horror movie.
Mm. Well, we are coming up on the 10 o'clock hour, 10 o'clock Eastern here. We're going to show the trailer one last time before we wrap things up. And here we go. Here's a trailer for The Nursery coming out June 5th by Uncorked Entertainment.
Renee.
You scared me.
Sorry about the wait. Come on in. Tanya just put the baby down, so you should have a pretty easy night.
And there's a monitor here on the tablet.
We should get going, honey.
Something's going on in this house. Seeing things. You can't have him.
David!
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
Okay, so I threw the Deadly Grounds trailer in there as well. So that was the trailer for The Nursery coming out June 5th. But if you're interested in making sure that you get this movie, Chris, you said it's available for pre-order?
Yeah, actually, I didn't even know. I stumbled across it yesterday that it's available now for pre-order on iTunes. So if you want to be among the first to get a peek at The Nursery, definitely hop on iTunes and get your pre-order, and it should be available on June 5th. So we're pretty excited about that. When I saw that it was actually available for order, it was like, whoa, this is real now. This is awesome.
Yeah, that was great. Well, that's just, you texted us or emailed us, and I didn't see that either. Good find. That's
yeah. So the cool thing is on, I believe, iTunes, actually any of the VOD, you can link them, right, Kevin? And then so like if you buy it on iTunes, it's available through like Amazon or whatnot if you link your accounts.
Possibly. Movies Anywhere?
Movies Anywhere.
Depends on the certain distributors don't do it. Most of it should be linked, but I know sometimes certain movies don't. So I guess... It depends on, like I said, distributor or, I don't know exactly how it goes.
Well,
but
if it's not, then you're going to have to go to all your other mediums and buy it there.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, Nate, out there, it is available to add at least to your wish list on Google Play. So you'll be notified as soon as it is released.
Cool.
That's great.
Awesome.
That's great. Thank you.
And then buy it on physical media when that comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Which will be August. So I think August 7th. We're expecting it out on physical.
Cool. Nice.
By the way, when it comes to the physical media, we didn't get around to this. One of the things I'm all into, being a movie buff, is commentaries. What are some of the special features that might be on the physical media?
That hasn't been a part of the discussion yet with our distributor. So that's probably something that's still pending. So we did do lots of behind the scenes photography and that sort of thing. So that'd be cool. And obviously it would be just a dream for a horror fan to listen to Jay and I talk for an hour and a half over the film.
For the price of bus fare, I'm happy to come over and sit in your living room and talk about it.
I like Wolfie though. I love commentary. I like to hear what people have to say about certain things. I mean, I understand why not everyone would love it. But I'm like, I want to know what their thoughts were at this time, you know?
There's stuff in there, like real quickly, Emmeline, who plays Callista, she has to drive in the film. She doesn't have her license. We had to teach her how to drive, and she almost killed all of us, but we threw in there. So she, there are little stories like that that we'd love to tell.
That's the stuff I like to hear, you know? It's always interesting to... You know, you're like watching all of a sudden, like, okay, so, oh, Jay, do you remember this scene? This is where the camera froze, and we had to go out and get another hard drive, and you know, something like that. And it just the little things I love, and that's why I love commentaries.
Yeah,
I must say, I got more into commentaries doing this show, because back then I was more into the behind the scenes kind of deal, the bloopers and stuff. But the more doing the podcasts and learning the stories behind it, we're not able to get all the people that we would want to come on the show and whatever. So the commentary is like almost the next best thing. You hear these stories. That's why I like doing this podcast, because, it opened my eyes. What people think they know about watching a movie and what actually goes on is completely two different things. They watch a movie and they're like, oh, this thing is horrible. They did nothing. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes that, people put blood, everything they had into the movie, and so many things could have went wrong and all this stuff. There's so many horror stories we hear from whatever, and having the people on and knowing this is what they came out with all the hardships and whatever. I give it to everybody that comes on here,
whether it's a new level of respect to it.
Exactly. So with the commentaries, it's like, you know, I learned more than I would have. I didn't listen to them before. Now I try to. I tend to do it more is because it's like I think I watch a movie and I think I know what's going on. And then you have these commentaries and you're like, I was totally wrong. You know, this could have been different. So I appreciate it more now than I ever did before.
So long story short, add some commentaries. Cool.
Thank you, guys.
Sold. Yeah.
Well, one thing we want to make sure you know, check out The Nursery. Nursery comes out Nursery. Nursery comes out June 5th from Uncorked Entertainment. And if you missed this episode, if you're just tuning in, we archive these over on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, and Twitch. But also, more importantly, check out our audio podcast. So we'll rip the audio. Kevin will edit it. And it goes on up on the Dorkening Podcast Network for the Wicked Horror Show, which is now on Spotify. Our shows are found everywhere, including Spotify now. We just found that out this week.
Yeah. I think the way that we found out was one of the other guys that's on the network was like, hey, we're on Spotify now. Can I promote this?
Yeah.
We're like, sure, I guess we're on Spotify. Cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's we were great. Told not to say anything until it was... was up, so it's a little secret there. But more importantly,
I just found out now.
Yeah. we'll start with Jay. Jay, where do you like people following you?
You can go to our Facebook page to the Nursery Movie.
Okay. And Chris, same for you.
We prefer to like focus everyone on the movie page. So it's facebook.com/ the Nursery Movie, or you can get us on our website where you can see the trailers and behind the scenes photos at thenurserymovie.com.
Awesome. Tony?
You can find me in Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, where I also do movie reviews. Also, Tony Has Nine Fingers on Twitter, Horror Amino, and the Stardust app. You can find me on Instagram, where I show off my movies at Tony's Movies. And you can find me here on The Dorkening.
Wolfie.
You can find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolfman, Twitter at The 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowler, every Sunday in the Dark, every Tuesday in the Wicked Horror Show, doing the Horror One with Kevin, which I got to do the Wicked Horror Reviews. And of course, I now have, I have had it for a while, but I haven't talked about it, 13th Wolfman Letterbox. And check out my most recent Moby movie review, and always check out the stuff that we're promoting here on The Dorkening, on Wicked Horror Show. Mm. Kev?
A Knuckle on Twitter, Instagram. Every Sunday in the Dorkening, Tuesday Wicked Horror Show, doing stuff with Wolfie. And I think, I don't know when Secret Underground Hideout's coming out. I think it's maybe the next week episode I'm on for that. Anyways, I'll remind everyone on Sunday. But anyways, yeah, that's it. Leo?
Yeah, my name's Leo Pond. I'm the monkey behind the keyboard here, making sure everything works. And in a couple minutes, you're going to find me in bed.
No, I won't. If I find you in my bed, no. My wife's got some explaining to do.
I want to thank everybody for watching. As you heard, we do this multiple times throughout the week because we are insane. We do a Sunday morning show at 10 a.m. Eastern. The Wicked Horror Show is every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And the Ultimate Video Games Show is Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, except for this Thursday and next Thursday because I bought Deadpool tickets and Solo tickets. So, that's going to be fun.
Priorities, my friends, priorities.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of happy because that actually means I can see Deadpool on Thursday.
That we recommend, and you guys killed it. And
thank you.
It was my pleasure to check it out. So, congrats.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. And now we'll catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let me know when we're done.
I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.